Thankfully, the children in the room are pretty small because we're going to talk about sex. Okay? So the E in dream is Eros. So D was domestic support. R is respect. The E in dream, the third key, is Eros. And most men would tell you, this is like the show me the money. You know, this is like, if you want to show up in the bedroom, that's how he'll know. My wife went to a seminar, and my wife respects me because she wants to make love to me. That's how this is gonna translate. So Dennis Prager, who I quoted before, the talk show host, he says it in a way that really helped me understand. He said that the last thing on our mind is the first thing on his. Okay? So you think like, oh, do you want to have sex? And you think, well, I got to do the dishes, and I got to get that birthday gift, and I got to pick up the kids, and I have that thing to plan for, and at work I've got this deadline. No, I do not want to have sex. I mean, it's like way down at the end of the list. But you ask your husband, would you like to have sex? Sure, I would love to have sex, because he's been thinking about having sex all day long, where we are not like this. I really do not know why God wired one sex to be so one way and the other sex. I don't really get that. Maybe that will be one of those questions where we ask God, Lord, why did you do that? Why did you make it so that men want to have sex so much and women are just like, you know, whenever is fine. You know, why did you do that? So last year, I sprained my ankle. So this is my visual aid for my thing. I sprained my ankle and I had this big black boot I had to wear. And because I was wearing my boot and I couldn't walk very well, I wasn't showering every day, and my hair was like all greasy because I was just at home writing this book about the happy husband, you know. So, honest. So I'm at the computer and I have the kids, and for the first time in a long time, I had the kids over at my parents' house because I said, I really have got this deadline. I have got to write. Could you please watch the kids? So I was home alone in the afternoon with my greasy hair and my big black boot and my computer. And I was typing in a way, and I was happy as can be. And who would walk in but my happy husband with a dozen roses? So he walks in with a dozen roses. Oh, sweetie, that's so sweet. Thank you so much for giving me the roses. That's lovely. Type, right? But half an hour later, now mind you, we've been busy, had the ankle, had the kids all the time, and here we are alone in the house without children, you know? And he comes back, and he's like, you know, do you think we could, you know, and do you think we could do that? And I'm just like, so I thought about it. I thought, well, here I am writing this book about a happy husband, 31 days to a happy husband. And here's my little Romeo come home with flowers, all sweet to me all the time. And he asks, we're alone. I thought to myself, this is a very reasonable request. You know, it's like we have not been alone in the house for a while. We should have sex. This is a great opportunity. Now, did I feel like having sex? I felt like meeting my deadline. I knew this was like my pocket of time to really write. Did I feel sexy? I had greasy hair from not showering. I had this thing on my foot, and I was just like feeling so gross. It's the last thing I wanted to do. But I thought to myself, we have the opportunity. The timing is right. You better get on board, girl. So I said to him, okay, how about in a half an hour? And he said, great. So I wrote, you know, for another 10 minutes, kind of finishing my thoughts, and then I went, and I tried to get kind of cleaned up, and it was fine. Now, did I want to do any of those things? No, I did not. Was I in the mood? Amorous, oh, sweetheart, take me away. It's like, no, if you go by your feelings, it's like, sweetheart, leave me alone. I feel gross. I don't want to do this. I have a task at hand. Forget it. But it made sense. It was like, this makes sense to me. We've got this time alone. We should go for it. And so many times we wait for our feelings, but the feelings don't come, do they? And we keep waiting for those romantic feelings. We keep waiting for feelings, but the feelings don't come. So sometimes we must act first, ladies, and then the feelings come afterwards. We decide and we act and we do this and then the feelings follow. So I'm in Edie's Parenting with Purpose class, and we asked, tell us the top five needs of a husband. So the women come up with what they think are the top five needs of the husband, and the men come up with what they think are the top five. You know what it was? So number one need was sexual fulfillment. It just begs the question, if this is the number one need of our husband, why do so many of us struggle in this area, right? It's like it's so hard. And the way that I have two stories for you. One of them is, think about a shower with tiles, shower all with tiles, and picture if one of the tiles was missing. What would happen is you go in there and you'd say, oh, this one is missing. And all you would do is notice the missing one. You wouldn't notice the 99 other ones that were perfectly in place. You just notice that one that's wrong. And until that one got fixed up, you'd think this shower is no good. It just needs to get fixed up. And that sex tile, that tile is like sex. It's like if that part is not working in your marriage, the whole thing feels wrong. Like it's just not quite working. But if you can get that one tile in place and good, then everything else can be enjoyed. Well, we as women, we tend to think, well, all the other stuff is okay. You know, like I'm cooking for my husband, I'm respecting my husband, I do these things. Certainly, that's got to count for something. But the tile that he's looking at is that one missing one that's not there. But the good news is if we can take time to, like, patch that thing up, put some stuff on it and put a new tile there, then the marriage all of a sudden, has this new life and a new strength. So think of it, it's like that missing tile, and your husband is fixated on that tile. But once it's taken care of, he won't be so fixated on it all the time. I was trying to ask James, you know, James, I mean, honestly, we don't get it. We just don't get it. And he said, you know, when I was in, he used to work at a country club. Fancy country club when he was in high school. And so he remembers shining people's shoes, and he remembers, you know, serving them from whatever side it is that you serve on them and the correct place setting, etc. And he was not required to get a tip. It's just that was his job. That's what he did. But once in a while, there'd be a person who would notice that he did just a really extraordinary job and would give him a tip. And he said that was like the currency of appreciation. He knew, I'm appreciated. And he said, when you guys make love to us, like you really want to make love to us, it's like that tip. It shows me I'm appreciated. I am, and it struck me, that's your currency of appreciation. I feel appreciated when you tell me, like, thanks, honey, or you do something nice for me, or you write me a note or something like this. I feel appreciated. You know, I don't feel appreciated when you say, honey, let's go to bed together. You know, it's like, that's not how I feel appreciated, right? But the currency, we tend to use the currency of appreciation that we want. So we appreciate our husband. Oh, honey, thank you, sweetheart. You're so nice. I appreciate that. That's not the currency he wants. It's the same way, like, if we did something great for our husband and he's like, come on, honey, let's get to the bedroom quick. We would be like, what? Just say thank you and give me a note from Hallmark, you know. Because we as women, we want to appreciate our husbands. So then if we can get in our minds, well, the way we appreciate our husband is by giving him our body, and not just like, I used to think like as long as I showed up, it was okay. But then I realized, well, you can show up, but they know if your mind is like way over here, or if you're just like, could we like get this done, you know, because I have other things to do, you know, they know this. So they want you not to just show up with your body. I used to think that was enough. But you show up your whole being, and like you want to, like the poor man, he doesn't just want to make love to a body. He wants to make love to someone who loves him, who wants him, who finds him attractive. He wants to make love to something much deeper than just, you know, something with limbs and arms. He wants to make love to the wife of his youth, and we have to act like we want to be there. So I had the wonderful opportunity to ask Cliff and Joyce Penner. So they've been sex therapists for years. They have 40,000 hours of counseling behind them, all these books sold. So I got to talk with them, and so it was a bit intimidating, you know, to ask the Penners about sex. So here we were on the phone together, and I was so surprised. I truly was surprised by what they told me. So my first question was, now, you know, Doctor and Dr. Penner, I know men typically would like to have more sex in the marriage, so how can a woman cultivate her appetite for sex? You know, how can we want to have sex more since we already know our husband wants to have so much sex? How can we do this? And they said something different. They said, we might see things a little different from your question, Arlene. We would ask a different question. We think that a woman will get with her sexuality and her desire when that doesn't come as a demand or a pressure from the husband. Men are trying to get it in the wrong way, says Joyce. So I was like, really? Okay. All right, because so much, isn't it true, you hear like, oh, we're supposed to have sex, so I should learn how to want more sex, so this would be good for our marriage. They say, no, no, that's not, you don't say to yourself you're supposed to have sex. You don't do that. They say, Dr. Penner says, as he adores and compliments her, connecting with her heart, then she is able to open up her body. There is nothing that turns on a man more than a turned on woman. And that's what they kept saying to me. There's nothing that turns on a man more. Nothing's going to turn your husband on more than you being turned on to have sex with him. So again, so I'm thinking like, okay, so let's say, so your husband, if he's adoring and complimenting you, now here's the problem. My dear husband, James, last February decided I'm just going to concentrate on adoring and complimenting my wife. So for 1 month, he like wrote me notes. He wrote like all these scraps of paper notes, and he hid them all throughout our house. I'd find them in the pockets of my jacket, find them in my shoe. I'd find them everywhere, all these notes. And he thought, if I adore and compliment her, certainly that will warm her up, that she'll want to make love more. And do you know what that poor man said to me? He said, nothing changed. It was just the same. And do you know, it's because we as women, we just think, oh, that's so nice. He's giving me notes. That's like his currency of appreciation. And I'm saying, thank you, sweetheart. And that's my currency of appreciation. I miss the whole point. So sometimes we as women, even when they do adore and compliment us and they're good men and they're wonderful, we still don't return with that physical affection that they want, that they need. So it really showed me like, wow, okay, so how can I become this more turned on woman like the Penners talk about? How can you become more sexually interested? I thought about something that Pam and Bill Farrell talk about. Pam and Bill are authors. They wrote Red Hot Monogamy, and they are speakers, and oftentimes they travel apart. And so Pam says, when I am away from Bill, I try to do things to stay connected to him. So she'll wear like a shirt of his that has cologne on it, or she'll walk through his closet and just take a deep sniff and just smell him. And then she'll go through, you know, pictures, or she'll do things that remind her of her husband, so that when she sees him, she's longing for him. So I thought that was such a good idea, to create ways in our life where we long for our husband, whether it's looking through an old photo album, looking at pictures when you were married, reading a note that he might have written you, even if it was 15 years ago, reading a note, doing something that makes you want to be with him, so to cultivate that desire for him. So Dr. Penner continues talking about what we can give as a gift to our husbands. The greatest gift you can give to your husband is to get with and live out your sexual self. Did you know you had a sexual self? She has to believe, first of all, she has to believe that one, she is a sexual person, and two, it is her right to be intensely sexual, says Dr. Penner. Joyce says the hardest thing working with women is helping them become sexually selfish, embracing their own sexuality as God designed. So we all come from different parts of the spectrum. I know there are women that's like, no problem. It's like, come on, baby, let's do it. It's no problem. There are other women that it's like, you know, more of a struggle to say and have a meaningful, fulfilling sex life. It's more of a struggle. Like, for instance, I think of my son Ethan, not about having a sex life. He's only 7. But at a time, he was allergic to nuts. When he was real little, he ate a cashew, and he broke out into an allergy. And so he's grown up thinking he is allergic to nuts, all nuts, because we didn't know. So all nuts. But now that he's 7, we've had him try like a walnut. We've had him try a peanut. And it seems like cashew is the only nut that he reacts to. But he's so afraid, he doesn't want to taste any nut, because he thinks this is going to be bad for me. So if he sees a nut, even if it's not a cashew, he's like, I don't want that. Now we, as women, if we've grown up in the church, we are thinking sex is not that good. Like if you grow up in the church, you think sex is for the people that are out there and they are just not doing the right thing. And so sex is to be avoided. We wait for sex until we're married, etc. And that is all good and well. It's good, obviously, to wait till you're married. But what happens is you put the wedding ring on, and you still have this underlying attitude that sex is, oh, we really don't talk about that. You know, that is something that's more private. That is something that is not, we shouldn't talk about the subject, you know, and that's, it still has that nut allergy effect in our lives. We're so used to putting it over here. Now that we're married and we're like free reign and have fun with your sexual life, it's like we're still programmed that way. So it's going from the Sunday school room to the locker room, because our husbands, they live in the locker room. You know, their minds are locker room. When they talk to each other, they talk about sex. I mean, this is really, you know, you think of it, when was the last time you and your girlfriends were like, oh, well, how's your sex life? I mean, we don't do that, you know. But men, they talk about stuff like this because it's important to them. Like, they talk about the things they're going through, or this is what they talk about, apparently. So we as women have to be able to cross the aisle from the Sunday school class into the locker room to say, you know, when it comes to me and you, when it comes to you and your husband, that this is a free conversation. We can talk about this. I'm not going to be weird about it. We can talk about it. And we can do stuff. We can try new stuff. I'll be willing to try new stuff, and you can talk about it. So sometimes that's a bit of a stretch. Now, 1 Corinthians 7:4 says, the wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. In the same way, the husband does not have authority over his body, but yields to his wife. So it's a give and take. And for us, you know, it's we can't give for our husbands, but we can give for ourselves. So saying, me getting in touch with me being sexual, with me having, you know, a sex drive and trying to revive it or find it, that is a way I can serve my husband and serve our marriage. So, of course, there are roadblocks to things, to being intimate. I remember when I was pregnant with Lucy, she's our third, I was about 13 weeks along, and for some reason, I was feeling amorous. I mean, this did not happen very often. So I was 13 weeks pregnant, and I was like, I'm kind of looking forward to James coming home and having sex tonight. Like, I'm kind of thinking this way. And, you know, so, and I had had hummus that day, a lot of hummus. So nighttime comes around, right? And I'm like, oh, honey, you know, would you like to, we can go to bed early tonight. And he's like, oh, great. We get close to each other, and he's like, what's that smell? And I'm like, what smell? He's like, garlic. I smell a lot of garlic. And I was like, I had some hummus today. I'm like 13 weeks pregnant, right? I'm like, oh, yes, yeah, whatever. So I'm like, I had some hummus today. He's like, I don't know if I can do it. He says to me, and you know what happened that night? Absolutely nothing. Once he was like, I smell garlic. What's that garlic? I was like, I am so out of here. Then it just killed. The mood was over. I did not want to have sex anymore. It was over. It was done. Garlic killed my love life. It was over. No sex that night. The only night in the pregnancy I wanted to have sex, and no sex that night. So there are things that stand in your way of killing your love life, whether it's garlic, it's being tired, unforgiveness to your spouse, like you don't like him, so you don't want to make love to him, there's something wrong between you, so you don't want to be with him physically, you're not interested, whatever it is, there is some kind of roadblock there, oftentimes in life, and we as wives have got to figure out, how do I move this roadblock out of my life? A lot of times the thing for moms and all women who work is you're just too tired. At the end of the day, you are too tired. So you have to think about this. You think, okay, if this is so important to my marriage, making love to my husband, I think we would say is a very important thing to do in your marriage, I've got to clear something else off the calendar so that I can make love to my husband. Now, it sounds silly. Like, why would I do that? But then isn't it sillier to go to all these meetings and do stuff and then have your marriage fall apart in the background? That's way sillier than saying, okay, if I'm too busy and too tired to make love to my husband, then something needs to change in the parts of my life that I can change. Maybe I need to say no to a certain commitment so that I can be more physically ready for my husband. So there are sacrifices that have to be made to make sure that the love life is guarded. Dennis Prager writes this, women need to recognize how a man understands a wife's refusal to have sex with him. See, we just think, oh, we're just too tired, please be sensitive to me. But he sees it like she doesn't want to have sex with me. It's a refusal. And really, to just turn that around, have you ever kissed your husband and then he just kind of rebutted a little bit? You know, like you kiss him and you think, oh, isn't this nice, I'm kissing my husband, and he just kind of pecked you back and then walked away? And then your heart kind of felt like it was out there. And then it's like, oh, I guess you're not interested right now. And then you feel so like, oh, I feel kind of alienated by that or separated. Well, the same way when we say, well, honey, you know, I'm too tired, or could we do it another night or whatever, that feels like that he extended himself, put himself out on the line, and then he was just left there with nothing. Now, there's going to be times where you have to say, honey, this is not a good night. I'm sick. You know, whatever. I mean, this stuff happens. But instead of just saying, honey, no, you say, honey, how about like Wednesday? You know, and you know, you say, we're going to do this. This is important, but this is just not an important. I can't do it now, but let's do it, whatever. And you give a specific time and you really do it and you plan it so that he doesn't feel like, wow, I'm being rejected by my spouse in this very important area of life. Dennis Prager continues, a husband knows that his wife loves him first and foremost by her willingness to give her body to him. This is rarely the case for women. A man whose wife frequently denies him sex will first be hurt, then sad, then angry, then quiet. And most men will never tell their wives why they have become quiet and distant. They are afraid to tell their wives. So oftentimes we just push, 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 push. And after a while, they get the message loud and clear. I guess I'm not supposed to ask for this anymore. And they distance themselves. We don't want that. So we need to be of the disposition. How can I get with the program, as the Penners would say, get with the program and realize I'm a sexual being with sexual needs, and my husband's also a sexual being with sexual needs. How can we get with the program that we have enough time to do this together with energy and not when we're at the end of ourselves, you know? Bill Farrell says this, we all talk about a woman's cycle. Don't we always talk about our cycle? We're like infamous for it. So we all talk about a woman's cycle, but I've got to tell you, there's a cycle that men go through too. Every 3 or 4 days, a man's body gets ready to have sex. There are times when guys don't think straight, they don't feel straight, and they're just grumpy and irritable until they can have sex. As soon as they have sex, they look at the world differently. A guy who's married to a wife that will accept that and say, I'm going to help you do better by sometimes having sex just because you want to, those men are madly in love with those women because they can't believe she actually understands. Wouldn't it be nice to have your husband think of you, I can't believe my wife gets it. I'm the luckiest man on the planet. My wife gets that I need to have sex, and we have fun doing it. That would be awesome for your husband to feel that way. So Dr. David Clark, the Kiss Me Like You Mean It guy, suggests having a regular dialogue to keep talking about your sex life. Ask each other, what can I do better? What do you like from me? What don't you like from me? And of course, you don't want to do this in the bedroom when you're doing it, because then you're going to start fighting, and that's bad. So you do this at a different time of day where you're very well rested, and you say to your husband, is there anything I could do better? What do you like? You know, et cetera. Sex happens spontaneously and passionately on the big screen, but rarely in real life if you're a busy person. So this is what Dr. Clark suggests. Working as a team, you schedule your sex. Now, some of you may be in a stage in your life where you don't have to do this. Your kids are out of the house. You're working such that you guys can still like pounce on each other and it's fine. It can be all spontaneous. But a lot of times, it's not that way. And if your sex is not scheduled, it doesn't happen. It says here, couples with kids that don't schedule sex don't have sex. Or at least they don't have it very often. Here's how it works. If we schedule that we're going to have sex in 1 or 2 days, we can both start getting prepared. The man doesn't need much time, but the woman does. Now she can start looking forward to it and marshaling her resources so she's not spent that day. That's a day that you want to save your energy and start thinking about it. Women have to work on this more than men. We think about sex all the time, Dr. Clark speaking. Now we think about it with our wives. That's the good news. Okay? So your husband, he's thinking about having sex with you all the time. So be ready in your mind to think, like, I want to embrace this. Like, this is fun. This is supposed to be fun. This isn't supposed to be, like, a drag, like this terrible thing to do. Oh, go have sex with your husband. No. It's supposed to be something that's enjoyed, that's celebrated. So here's the question. How can you have sex by decision versus sex by duty? Duty says, we're married. My wife belongs to you. I have to do it. So here I am. Decision says, we're married. I know sex is a huge component of marriage. God created this, so I'm going to get with the program. I'm going to decide. I have got to enjoy sex more, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to learn. I'm going to explore with my husband. We're going to talk about it. We're going to make this fun journey, and we're going to do it. So there is a responsibility there. You know, we are being responsible, but we also have to decide, so it's not like this, I have to do this thing with my husband, because he doesn't want to make love to a woman who has to make love to him. You know, that doesn't turn him on at all. So he wants a turned on woman. So a turned on woman is probably rested. So really, to get control of our lives so that we can sleep 8 hours a night and get our kids to the place where they're sleeping through the night so we can sleep and really guard that, like when they're asleep, you know, for us not to be on Facebook for 3 hours, but for us to go to sleep too so that we can have our sleep so that we do have the energy to say to our husbands, I'm available, I'm ready, like I'm excited about this, let's go make love, let's schedule it for Thursday night, you know, whatever the case may be, and make it happen. And this is the way your husband, it communicates that appreciation, like, okay, she gets it, she gets me, she wants to make love to me, she looks forward to making love to me. It's maybe a quarterly getaway where you get a hotel downtown and you just spend one night out of your house, or you have someone watch all your kids and you and your husband are in the house by yourself for even once a year, you know, just do something that's a special time for you and him to reconnect physically, and that will mean so much to him. He doesn't want all the foo-foo stuff that we want. He wants someone naughty in the bedroom. That's what he wants. So that'll make him feel like, I'm appreciated. She loves me. She cares about me. Okay? So this is really key for this point, is two things. The first thing is, well, how do you just rev this up? You know, how do you just create this? Like, this is nice mentally, but how does this really happen? And the counselors say this, and I think it is true, we have found this to be true, is kissing. Because what we have found, when you get married, after a while, you stop kissing. Because we women, we know if you kiss me, that means you're going to throw me over your shoulder and, like, take me up to the bedroom, and we don't have time for that right now. You know, if there's passionate kissing, it means, oh, he wants to have sex. So we turn off the passionate kissing because we don't have time for all that passionate kissing and all the sex business. We're busy women. So we stop kissing. So again, when I read that book, Kiss Me Like You Mean It, I realized James and I, we don't kiss that much. You know, until you're going to make love, you kiss. Otherwise, you don't kiss that much. So what the psychologists, all of them say, is 5 to 30 seconds of passionate kissing every day. And you communicate together as a couple, we want to kiss more. If you say to your husband, I want to kiss you more, he's not going to be like, gross. I mean, he's going to like that. So you say to your husband, I want to kiss you more. But every time we kiss passionately, that's not a signal, like, I want to make love. That's not what that means, because we're thinking they think that's what that means, so we don't do it. And instead, you tell them, I want our lovemaking to be sweeter, and the way that will help me is to feel connected to you. And the way I feel connected to you will be by kissing you every day, but every day is not going to lead to the bedroom, you know. So you know when we kiss, it's only for kissing's sake. Doesn't lead to anything. It's only for kissing's sake. And he will actually like it. He'll like it. And what they say is when you kiss, it like keeps the pilot light on. So everything is all warmed up. So when it's time to make love, you're there. It's not like going from the cold North Pole and you have to go all the way to the Amazon, you know. You've got that pilot light on and you've been kissing. So that's what they recommend. If they could recommend anything, Joyce Penner says if there was one key to leave you with, it would be to kiss passionately. When she knows I'm going to kiss passionately every day, but has nothing to do with whether I want sex tonight. It has to do with I love you and it feels good. It's going to keep my pilot light on so I can get more turned on a regular basis. We love kissing. Isn't that sweet? And it's really true because it's very easy to fall out of kissing passionately. You just live life together. You're like amiable roommates. You don't have all that passion of lovers because it's so easy to not do it. It's like you don't, so you have to really, you think it just happens naturally. I love my husband and we kiss. It doesn't, you have to say to yourself, oh, walk over to your husband right now. Maybe it's when he comes in the door when you greet him, but you have to think about it. Did I kiss him today? And a lot of times, I didn't. And you think, okay, let me do that. So let that be your action step. I'm going to make sure before I hit the pillow, I've kissed my husband for 5 to 30 seconds passionately, and he knows I'm his and that I love him. He's going to love that. You grab him before he goes out to work. You kiss him. Get him in the kitchen when nobody's looking. You kiss him. And do you know, it's okay for your kids to see you guys kissing. You know, not like crazy or anything, but for them to see you kissing because that gives them a health. They're going to see it on TV. They're going to see it at school. They're going to see it everywhere. But they don't see it at home. So they think, oh, being a mom and dad is real boring. They don't do anything. So it's okay to let them see you kissing so that they know the healthy kissing occurs between a husband and a wife so that they learn that. So many times we don't do things because of our kids. Oh, I don't want to do that. What will my kids say, you know? But then you realize, well, that's really what our kids need to see. Our kids need to see us being affectionate with their father. So they see, oh, that's what affection looks like. They need to see that. So don't let it deter you. Let it even encourage you to just plant one on him and kiss him and hold him and hug him, scratch his back, and run your fingers through his hair, whatever. So do those affectionate things. James always tells me, just do what you used to do when we were dating. Hold my hand like you used to when we were dating. Stroke my back like you used to. Kiss me like we were dating. So Valentine's Day last year, the kids were at my mom and dad's, and he took me out to this park, and he brought root beer floats in a little cooler, and that's like one of my favorites, so it was so sweet. So we got root beer floats, we had root beer floats, and we had like a little view of the city at this park. And then he puts out this blanket, right? And he wants us to like sit there and, you know, make out and stuff. So we sit on the blanket, and I'm like, no, I'm like, honey, there are people. Because it's dark, but I mean, it's a park. And I could see, like, I could hear, like, a bike, and then I could hear, like, footsteps, jogger, you know. And I was like, sweetheart, there's people. We could be the people that our children see and we try to avoid. So I said, I don't want to be those people. And he's like, you used to do this all the time when we were dating, right? You used to make out with your boyfriend all the time in the park bench. Ooh, you'd kiss, you'd hug, and all this. And he's like, why won't you do it now? We're married. Like, it's totally even better. We're married. It's okay. So I've had to learn how to kind of let your guard down a little bit and be more affectionate with your husband because it means so much to him. So kiss, keep the pilot light on, make the decision. Okay, sex is really important to a man. So, and to my husband, so I'm going to make sex important to me. And pray. A lot of times there's tension there because his needs aren't being met, your needs aren't being met. There's tension. She should pray alone, Lord, help me. Help me get with the program sexually. Help me to want to make love with my husband. Show me how to be a turned-on woman. So there's this church in Texas who did, from the pulpit, the senior pastor gave the congregation a 7-day sex challenge. He said, we're going to bless the families in our congregation. You guys go out, and if you're married, you have sex for 7 days in a row, and it's going to be great. So he had that. So I thought, I heard about that. I thought, well, that's kind of cool. So a few years back, I thought, I'll do it to James, like as a gift. I'll do the 7-day thing to James as a gift. So we're on about day 4, and I'm like, man, I just want to go to sleep. This is ridiculous. But I think to myself, and so I say to him, honey, have you noticed I've been doing this, like, thing, like this, you know, and he's like, no, because I'm thinking, I don't want to break it, because, you know, I'm trying to get to day 7, but I'm thinking, does he even, like, notice what we're doing here? And I said, did you know I'm doing, like, the 7-day sex challenge, where I'm trying to make love to you 7 days in a row, did you notice? He's like, I thought it was the new normal. So ladies, our husbands cannot get enough of us. So just know that you are so loved, so beautiful, so precious to your husband.